The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host or their guests do not necessarily reflect those of ParaX, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Thank you. Everybody, please take your seat as paraphernalia is about to start.
Okay. Let's do it.
Who's rocking the paranormal world? Well, you're about to find out. You're listening to Paraphernalia, only on ParaX.com. Everything you wanted to know and a few things you wish you hadn't heard. It's Paraphernalia, and it starts now. Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to another Paraphernalia. I'm sure you realize that we were not on, I was not on last week. I was actually at a memorial for my dear father-in-law, William Ramsey. So it has actually been a tough couple of weeks for my family here on the Ramsey side. We actually had two people pass away in the same week, possibly the same day even. I'm a little off on that. We lost my father-in-law after a long battle with two liver transplants and hepatitis and all kinds of stuff that he got from the hospital, by the way. And it's just been really tough. And he was a Methodist minister for, you know, whatever, 30 years. And so there was two memorials, one in Florida and one in Las Vegas, where he had his church for many, many years, for 15 or 20 years with his congregation. He started like three different churches there. So anyway, it's been really tough. On my family, there's been a lot of people giving their condolences, and we really appreciate that. And then the second person was my husband's nephews, Ian and Michael. Their dad, John Michael Garasio, had a heart attack and passed away in Colorado. So it's been, it was just sudden and totally unexpected. He was fairly young, and so it's just been really tough on us. And I know I'm usually laughing and crazy and all that, and we'll get to that, but I just want to say that this tonight's episode of Paraphernalia is dedicated to both of their memories, and they will be sorely missed. And but there's been a lot of celebration actually surrounding my father-in-law's passing. He was a very unique guy, and he knew this was coming, and he planned it down to the last letter. And let me tell you, I've never seen quite such a celebration, and it was long, but it was amazing. And they had to actually take the mic back from people. There were so many people that wanted to talk about him, they had to like say, okay, let's stop now. And a guy told a semi-dirty joke in church on behalf of Ed. Well, we called him Ed. His name was William Edward Ramsey, but everybody called him Eddie. So on behalf of him, which was just hilarious. I've never seen people laugh so hard at a memorial service, but they did. Very unique. And at the end, as a celebration, we actually threw out balloons, and this is what he wanted. And it was very interesting, very different, but he always wanted people to be happy. And so he made sure that even though it had its sadder moments, he made sure people left with a smile on their face, because that's what he did. Excuse me. Anyway, I swear I'm going to tear up tonight. So I'm going to play some songs that were some of Ed's favorite, my father-in-law's favorites tonight, but they still have rock in them. And we will cheer up a little bit later. And the good news, have you heard the good news? The good news is that I have an awesome guest. I have kind of like two guests. I have one person who's going to be my co-host during an interview tonight. And then my guest, or our guest, will be A lady who, excuse me, I'm sorry, I'm a little choked up. A lady who has worked in haunted theater in San Francisco. So that's going to be awesome. Her name is Summer Shakazy. And so we apologize. We're actually going to do this last week, but I was unavailable, like I said, at the memorial. But this week we're on. It's going to be great and fantastic. And then the person who's going to co-host that interview with me is none other than author and soon to be a movie man. He's a screenplay writer, E.W. Bradfute. And he and I actually have a show on Friday nights on Blog Talk Radio called Paranormal. It's that one that's spelled P-A-I-R-A, normal, as I say. Paranormal people. And then there's a question mark after it because we're not normal. But I think you already knew that by now. Anyway, maybe we can squeeze in a little bit of our coming to you from outer space. It's Sweet Roll's Paranormal Celebrity News. Okay, well, I guess this qualifies as a celebrity news in a way. Tonight, a little bit later on tonight at 10 p.m. Eastern, I understand that there's going to be a live investigation from the Wolf Manor, from Clovis Wolf Manor in Clovis, California. There's been a ton of activity there, and I think a lot of people are familiar with it. So it's kind of exciting to get a chance to watch some of that live. So you can tune in at, I believe it's wolfman.com, which is wolfeman.com. Heard some great EVPs from there, seen some fantastic footage. One of the videos that I just saw earlier today was something that Melissa Burke had posted, and I think it was a funny one, and I went and watched some of their other videos, like the ball spontaneously moving, no one in the house. It doesn't just roll, it twists and then rolls and moves. So it's really kind of exciting, and I know that there's a lot of activity in there. So I'll be tuning in because I'm very excited. I'd love to go there in person, but for tonight, I will settle for a live investigation via the internet video. So that's kind of cool, you know, and plus, I've heard interviews, with this guy, what's his first name? It's like I totally lost it. Anyway, his last name is Wolf. Anyway, he is hilarious, funny guy. So it should be a good investigation and funny. So, anyway, that's really all I have today. I haven't had time to research anything, for the news, let's go ahead and play a song and take a break, and we'll come back and bring EW and Summer Shakazy on. And I'm going to go ahead and play this song. It's called Everything's All Right from Jesus Christ Superstar. Eddie, this is for you.
Try not to get worried. Try not to turn on to problems that upset you. You know everything's all right, yes, everything's fine, and we want you to sleep well tonight. Let the world turn without you tonight. If we try, we'll get by, so forget all about us tonight.
Everything's all right, yes, everything's all right, yes.
Sleep and I shall soothe you, calm you and anoint.
Everything's all right, yes. Everything's all right, yes.
Come on. turn without you tonight. If we try, we'll get by, so forget all about us tonight.
Everything's alright, yes, everything's alright, yes.
Surely you're not saying we have the resources to save the poor from their lot. There will be more always pathetically struggling. Look at the good things you've got. Think while you still have me. Move while you still see me. You'll be lost. You'll be so, so lonely when I'm gone.
Sleep and I shall soon be coming. And I'm marching before you have worked it out. And you feel everything's alright. Yes, everything's fine. And it's cool and me and sweet. For the fire in your heavy feet. Close your eyes, close your eyes. And relax, think of nothing to tonight.
Hands can do incredible things. This is the sound of two hands helping to save a life. It's called hands-only CPR, and it's recommended by the American Heart Association. If an adult suddenly collapses, call 911, then push hard and fast in the center of their chest until help arrives. Hands can do incredible things, but nothing compares to using them to help save a life. For more information on this latest method of CPR, visit handsonlycpr.org today. A message from the American Heart Association and the Ad Council.
Okay, and we're back here on Paraphernalia on paradeshics.com. Very pleased to be back. You know, it feels good to be back, too. I mean, you know, we always have to leave and do things, and life somehow interrupts our little fun times that we like to do, and life or death seems to interrupt that, you know. And for someone like me who's so obsessed with what happens after we die, you know, it doesn't mean that it doesn't hurt when you lose someone. I mean, because literally... another birthday is a good thing. We're all going to find out eventually, right? So we got to keep that in mind and keep some perspective here on really what's important. And you guys are important to me tonight. I'm so glad that you've tuned in, that you're listening. I really appreciate your loyalty, and I love you all. So thank you very much. And it looks like, let's see, let me go ahead and get this all worked out and... I'm going to go ahead and get EW on the line because I know this is going to be a great interview tonight. Okay, and I always mention my puppies. Yes, I have my, if you can hear my English Mastiff puppies in the background, they're not crying. They actually just kind of open their mouths and look at each other and go, ah, 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 all the time. So, yes, 16 weeks, 47 pounds is the larger one, 16 weeks old. The other one's 40 pounds. So we have a small one and a big one, but they're both big. It's relative, right? Okay, let me go ahead and get EW. Hi, EW. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Robin. How you doing?
I'm great. I'm really excited that that you're gonna do this interview with me, and I really appreciate it. Appreciate you coming on and everything. So welcome to Para X.
Well, thanks for inviting me, and it's an honor to be here because I know you're like one of the best shows out there. So I you know, I couldn't just sit back and listen all the time. It's about time I get my foot in the door.
That's right. Your check is in the mail, and
there you
yeah,
go.
Yeah, totally. I appreciate it. So, but for those of you who don't know, like I just mentioned, on Friday nights at 10 p.m. Central, EW and I do a show together called Paranormal. It's the P-A-I-R-A Normal on Blog Talk. And so you're welcome to come over there anytime for some paranormal news, for interviews, just all kinds of, you know, down to the nitty gritty type paranormal stuff. But we do that every single Friday, and it's always a rockin' show. And there's a lot of people that already listen, but hey, there's room for you too. So.
And I'm still begging for the paranormal robot to make its appearance.
I know. I've been, yeah. We'll get a message out to him. see what we can do about that. But tonight you and I are going to be interviewing Summer Shakosi. I think I said that right. Shakosi. I'm so sorry, Summer. She's told us like a million times how to say her name, and it's just very difficult to believe an Indian name. She said, and whatever. Sorry.
And I thought I was the only one that slaughtered the names.
This one's a tough one. I mean, there. I have not interviewed anybody named Smith. I'm just saying, it's just tough. But anyway, why don't we go ahead and get her. Recently moved to Texas from San Francisco, working in one of the older theaters there. Our guest tonight is Summer Shakosi.
And see, I would have slaughtered that name.
Hello, everyone. Pleasure to be here.
Great. Well, it's fabulous to have you. You had mentioned to me that you worked in a theater that might have had some paranormal activity going on. Before we get into that, would you mind telling people a little bit about yourself?
Yes. Well, I actually just relocated to Austin, Texas from San Francisco, and I'm 41, and I was the facilities manager at a theater in San Francisco, and I moved to Austin just so that I can work in a garden and have my own apartment, you know, because it's pretty crowded and cramped in San Francisco, and you really can't live without having roommates unless you're totally loaded, which I am not. So really, that's pretty much it in a nutshell. I've just been, like, riding my bike around and getting used to the environs and everything, and I really like Texas. I really like living in Austin.
Oh, excellent. Well, on behalf of Austin, welcome.
Thank you.
Should be more on behalf of Texas.
Okay, on behalf of all Texas, but Austin, yeah. Yes, is our little oasis here, and we're glad you're here. Glad you're in Texas. So that's awesome. Maybe you'll have some paranormal experiences here because there's a ton of craziness going on here too. So how old was the theater that you worked in? Do you know?
Well, it was built in 1926. And it started out as a vaudeville house. And then from there, it became the Roosevelt Movie Theater. And it used to seat like about 1,000 people. And because it had a big balcony and that when, like, all the way back, well, I guess you can't see what I'm saying when I go all the way back. but it went all the way back. And then after that, it became the York Movie Theater and was the York. Gosh, I moved to San Francisco in 91, and it was still the York, still operating, showing movies. But then it closed and stood empty, like really empty, like gutted, for about 10 years or so. And then a theater group called Bravo for Women in the Arts bought it and took it over and renovated it into a 365-seat theater, performance theater and rental space. So it got well, pretty
I wanna...
much a facelift. So.
I'd like to ask, if you don't mind, what kind of house was it before that?
A vaudeville house.
A Broadville house.
A vaudeville house.
Vaudeville. What is a vaudeville house? Forgive me for asking.
A vaudeville house, well, back in the 20s and probably earlier than that, and even later than that, they had kind of entertainment called vaudeville entertainment, and that was just a number of different acts right after one another. It could be juggling or singing or just performing or doing, you know, playing music or whatever. And vaudeville performers actually, they carried on and had a pretty strong presence up until, oh, what, the 30s, 40s, something like that. I could be wrong. But yeah, vaudeville entertainment pretty much went out when the movies came along, I think.
Okay.
I should check my history, but
didn't often that. Like vaudeville performers. They do little shows and stuff, but they were commonly. I could be wrong, but then they have like the traveling medicine shows along with it that it kind of intertwined with.
Yeah, exactly. That was. A very close relationship, and probably I think one begat the other. Actually, when there wasn't much of a call for vaudeville performers anymore, I think they had to take it to the road and just do traveling shows. So.
I'm looking it up right now, so I can tell you what vaudeville is.
So,
what's it really?
Yeah. So, how in the world did you come to? See, you said you moved to Austin to work in a garden. But how did you come about being able to work at a theater like this? Because I think a lot of people be envious of that type of a job.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a really great job, and I hope to eventually. Try to get on board, you know, get a sense of the historic theater scene out here and see if I can do it again, because it is an awesome job. And I happened to get that job because I was in this job search program through General Assistance about 4 years ago, and I lucked into this position because Brava is a nonprofit organization, and so this job program that I was in basically set up an internship with all the nonprofits in San Francisco, and they just placed you with someone for like 10 hours a week. And so I got placed at the theater because I lived really close to there. and so it just so happened that I had an interest in it because I do actually have an interest in scenic design and things like that, so I was kind of like lucky to get my foot in the door, you know, in hopes of like, you know, just being able to volunteer, you know, and help, you know, with scenery or whatever. But as it turned out, part of my job as this office intern was to go through the whole theater and see what they had, because the funding had gotten severely cut, and so there weren't really very many people working. In fact, there were only 4 people on staff there, and so they had a lot of props and a lot of stuff just kind of piling up, and so they didn't really know what was there. And so one of my jobs was to crawl through the whole entire space and inventory what was there. So that's pretty much when I first started falling in love with it and was just like, wow, this place is awesome, because it was huge. I mean, it's really huge, and restored to the original facade and decoration inside. And I mean, you can see that it's got all of this Art Deco intricate ornate design on the inside, and it had this beautiful mural on the ceiling that got restored, and then you know, there were just tons of spaces like behind the organ lofts, you know, and everywhere else that you could tell hadn't been touched in decades. And so I got to go back there and like see what was there, and there were like old marquee letters and things like that, you know, that were just gathering dust, but I had to tally them. I had to inventory all that stuff. And it was really fun.
So tell us of your very first experience there. What was the very first thing that happened to you?
Well, the very first thing that happened to me personally, because I had been told, you know, different stories, you know, of other people, but nothing had really happened to me yet. But one of the things I had to do was paint the stage black, because the place was is a rental, as I was saying, and so that meant that we had a lot of different clients coming in back to back. And so, like, some of them, like, I think this one time there was a production ending, and the very next day something else was coming in, like they might have been showing films or something, but I had to get that paint, the stage painted, and the crossover was like very minimal, so I had to come in at like 4 in the morning and do it so that the stage was dry by the time people got there at 8, kind of thing. And mm-hmm. So I was there, and so the way that, you know, I was painting the stage was with a roller, but on a pole, like, and in the same way that you would mop a floor, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And and so I'm kind of in the center of the stage, you know, and you know how it feels when someone comes up behind you and you can feel a presence there, like they're a little bit too close or something? I kept feeling that, and no one was there. And so I'd, like, kind of, you know, paint or, you know, sort of mop around, and it was like someone was there, like, following, like, behind me, kind of following me along, and definitely no one was there, you know. And so that, I knew that had to be a spirit, you know, because it wasn't something that I had imagined it, and it couldn't have been anything else, because it was there. The presence was so strong.
Wow. You know, perhaps it was an old caretaker making sure you were doing it right.
That's totally what I thought. That's exactly what I thought, you know? And I can't imagine that anyone who took care of that building didn't just love it and really want to do a good job at it, you know, because when I got promoted to facilities manager, like, basically, I had a really good mentor, you know, that was pretty much just the handyman there, because he had another job going, but he taught me everything I knew, and then everything else I just learned, because I wanted to do a good job, you know, and it was just kind of fascinating taking care of this old building and having to deal with the city, and, like, I had to look into seismic stuff and stuff like that, you know, just, like, looking at all the nooks and crannies in there, and the whole place was just beautiful, you know. It's just this really ornate Art Deco old building, you know, and it had really high, the ceilings are really high, and so there's just a lot of space in there, you know, and it's easy to feel lost but feel like you're, like, full at the same time, you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm.
But,
well, I
but, yeah,
go ahead.
Oh, no, you go ahead.
I just wanted to ask you if before you worked there, did you believe in paranormal or even think about it? I mean, some of us are so immersed in the field that we forget that people who aren't paranormal investigators or radio show hosts talking about the paranormal, that not everybody walks around thinking about it or considering it even so.
Oh, right, right. No, I actually am very much into it. In fact, I got really excited that I felt that, and I knew that I wasn't imagining it, you know, and honestly, when I first heard other people, you know, talking about their experiences, I was like, please let something happen to me, you know, because I've always believed in it. I've always believed in spirits and otherworldly things happening, and I've never questioned anyone's stories, you know. I just totally know that some people are way more susceptible to it than others, you know, and this isn't the first time that I've had something like that happened to me, you know, and particularly when, like, I've had a few loved ones die, and namely my dad. I mean, his spirit is with me all the time, you know, and everything. But in a much more tangible way than you know, like people say that, oh, the spirit's in my heart, you know, and that kind of thing. But this is different, you know. This is a little bit different, you know.
I think I know what you mean, definitely.
Right. So, okay. So you were kind of really into it. What got you into the paranormal first? I guess that would make a difference for you for any listeners to understand how you foresaw what it was.
Well, let's see. I guess I've always had a sort of. Well, like ever since, you know, when you're a kid and you hear ghost stories and things like that, and or have any kind of like witchcraft scenarios, you know, like you're even like at slumber parties, you know, playing light as a feather, stiff as a boy, you know, that kind of thing, you know, like that, that definitely, you know, was the kind of stuff that I like to do. But then, like later on, you know, people like have like these little sort of urban legends around their towns and things like that. Like, well, we would actually try and go seek them out, you know. And sometimes they would work, but other times they wouldn't, you know. But it's like I found that if I was with someone that actually believed it with me, you know, like we would feel something, you know, like. I don't know. I know that's really a vague answer, but I can't really. I don't know if I have anything more specific than that to tell you. You know, because it's just something that's always kind of been there with me, and I don't know. Like, and plus, like I listen to Coast to Coast. Okay, you know, and so. When I listen to that kind of stuff, like some of it you have to take with a grain of salt, but other times, you know, it's like, that's got to be true. You know?
Well, you know, one thing that you mentioned to me when I talked to you earlier that very much intrigued me, and I'd like for you to share the story about in the theater about you and I believe it was your boss trying to open the safe.
Oh, yeah. It wasn't my boss. It was a house manager. Okay. And that is it was after a show, and she's the person who's in just basically like in charge of the place, like after everyone clears out, you know. And so we had several locked cabinets of, you know, for various things, and she was trying to get in one, and they are combination locks. And she kept doing the combination and couldn't open it. And then so she went to go check in the book. And realized that she had, like, reversed two numbers or something. And so she goes back to open it, and the combination lock is set, like, correctly so that she can open it. And she knows that she was doing it wrong.
Yeah.
And she comes back, and it was correct so that she could open the
That's
lock.
That's outstanding. She was getting a little help from the other side to get that open.
I totally think that. Oh, and here's something else that I thought of after our conversation was very recently, in fact, right before I left, because I've told these stories to other people, you know, just because they're like, is this place someone's? I'm like, yes, and here's why. And I had two apprentices that worked there. They were there late after a rehearsal, and they were locking up. And on our third floor is where our admin offices are, and there's a window in the theater house that goes to that office so that you can see up there. So they shut off all the lights. They, you know, were ready to close the place out, and they were setting the alarm, and it wouldn't set, and so it indicated they had to go check this door. So they went and checked it was the backstage door, so they had to go into the theater. So they went to go check the door, and it was locked, and they turned back around, and they can see the lights on in the window to the offices, and they know they shut them off. They were definitely off, and they were on. They were all on. So I asked them, did you go turn them off? And they were like, no way, we just left them.
Yeah, like, I was going to ask you if that freaked them out.
Yeah, they were freaked out, but they were like, we know it's true, because they were kind of skeptical at first. But it's, and I'm glad that it was two of them, too, you know, so it was just like, see, I knew it, you know. But
well, let me ask you, I mean, do you know of what might be haunting the place, such as, like, was there any deaths in the building, or was this particular ground sacred ground or something?
Well, as a matter of fact, that's a very good question. And yes, actually, when Brava bought the place and it was gutted, when they went to do the first excavation, they found two bodies in there because people would come and squat in there, like, all the time, you know? And so they found two bodies in there, and I don't know the story behind them. I don't know how it happened or how long they'd been there, but they definitely had a sacred circle, and they exercised the place. Like, the theater is in the Mission neighborhood in San Francisco, and there's this group of Aztec dancers that are in the neighborhood, and they often do dances all over the neighborhood. And they came and had a ceremony and totally exercised the place, and they purified it. Thank you. Oh. Like, I do this myself. I can't. But, yeah, they totally purified the whole place. And when they put in a new rehearsal studio, they did the same thing up there, too. They just, like, totally purified it.
Purified and all that. Yeah, I'm sorry. We're just letting you flounder.
Exactly.
We're just going to sit here until you think of that word. But,
all right.
I know.
We're like, nope, we've got all night long. But, that's awesome. So sorry about that. I know, but I was doing the same thing. I was like, okay, it's on the tip of my tongue.
It's the Bloody Marys.
Yeah, I know.
Exactly.
When I say Bloody Mary three times, a drink appears in my hand. I don't know about anybody else.
Woo-hoo, let me try that.
I know. Totally.
Is it your left hand?
It's both hands, sister. It's both hands. But I was going to ask you about, since it was San Francisco, do you think, or have you ever considered the possibility that some of the seismic activity or all that energy release going on has anything to do with maybe some heightened activity of the area?
Oh, yeah, I totally think that. And you can, especially, like, if you're there for, I don't know, how can I put this? Like, there are certain times, and, like, people think that it's because, oh, it's hot, and it's hot in the neighborhood, and the temperaments are flaring and all this stuff, you know. I think it's hot weather, but I think it's because the place is going to blow. It's like, there's definitely quakes happening, and you can tell by the animals. I mean, cats start acting crazy. The birds are just, like, flocking, like, in these really crazy ways. I don't know. There's a lot of, I got into this little urban bird watching, as I call it, because there's also falcons around there. and so like once I saw this falcon dive into this tree and like about 20 pigeons just shot out of it like a freaking machine gun, and it then right on the sidewalk in front of me, the falcon had a pigeon in its claws and starts rocking back and forth on it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this has got to be seismic. I mean, maybe it's natural selection, but how often does that happen?
Yeah, right in front of you, too, right in your face.
I know. I was just like, I don't know. Like, I don't know.
Right. Well, here's a question, and I guess you could probably use it for probably you as well, Robin. It's coming from the chat room private message. But do you think that seismic activity such as the earthquake, such as what happened in Guatemala and Haiti and all that, do you think that the energy that's created from that might produce spirits as well?
Well, I don't see how it couldn't. But they might not be such bad spirits because I was actually just reading this zine, actually, that my friend Ivy put out about Haiti and the aftermath and how everyone really just came together for one another and had this very moving moving vigil that that you in the midst of all of this destruction and, you know, sadness, there was just the most pure love that was undeniable, that everyone just came together for like 3 days, like after the month anniversary after the quake happened. Mm-hmm. I guess the whole place shut down for like 3 days for memorial, and she said it was unbelievable. You could just feel the love radiate in the whole island, and so I think that that good things, you know, come out of disasters. But you know, we don't see them, of course, because of course the media isn't going to cover something like that, you know. But
right.
But I definitely think that it's a relief. I think it's a relief of activity that's just been boiling up, and just. You know,
right. Were you in San Francisco when they had that real big quake that collapsed the double layer bridge and everything?
No, I was not. That was in 89, and I moved in 91. And while I was there, I felt a few earthquakes, but nothing.
Okay.
Like that.
See, I was going to ask if there was any activity during that time, if you had actually experienced during that time, but it would kind of help answer the question towards the. Possibilities, but
well, if I can interject here for a second and just say that I was the earthquake happened in late 89, and I was there for New Year's Eve of 89. Traveled there. I was in Oakland and San Francisco, and
oh wow!
I'll just tell you the feeling of the people around, the energy release from the people, and the general sense of anxiety and nervousness, I would have to say, was just releasing so much energy. I don't see how the activity could not have been heightened. I mean, I don't know if anybody was even attuned to that at the time because of all the tragedy that was going on. But I could say I spent the night with my friends. We spent a week there, and they lived in Oakland right next to the BART, which is the Bay Area Rapid Transit. And me, being right. from Central Texas, every time that train came by, I was like, it's an earthquake! It's an earthquake! I was nervous that whole time. So if I was feeling that, I can't imagine. I know some people get a little more used to it, but it was major. And I can't imagine. I mean, I just felt like the whole city and both cities were just in a heightened state, you know, in a way. So,
I'm sure.
Yeah, so
I'm
just
sure.
don't see how I couldn't. I'd be interested in, you know, and mm-hmm. talking to someone, you know, who had been there about it. I know my sister-in-law actually lived there at the time, and I think her building collapsed, and she survived, though. But she now lives in Texas. she left. She
as a result,
like,
right?
That is it. So maybe one of these days we'll have to ask her about that. But that's a very good question.
Well, you know, as I left, like, and plus, even especially like in the last 5 to 10 years, they have this whole attitude of, you never know when it's going to happen. It's going to strike any time, so you have to be prepared. And they're talking about, you have to have your earthquake kits, you have to have your jugs of water, your canned food, you have to have 3 days of food, you have to have all this stuff. And, you know, people keep that in their closets or something. You can't go back in your house after an earthquake, you know. I mean, it's like the kind of thing where, like, okay, so you're all set, but your house is condemned, and so you're not going to be thinking of getting to your hiding place where your earthquake survived. I mean, I know it's good to be prepared, but I'm just saying.
How about burying it in your backyard? That'd probably be away from.
You could bury it in the backyard. It'll emerge itself.
If you have a yard, yeah, if you have a yard.
I guess it's, right. No.
Oh, my goodness.
But anyhow, especially in the year after I left, like, all the time, on the news, you know, and little PSAs, they're just like, you never know when this is going to happen. There's this very sense of, you never know, like, you know, just like the Homeland Security. It's like, you have to be on alert. You have to be prepared. You have to be this. And there's so many thousands more people in San Francisco now than when I moved there almost 20 years ago. It's boiling. I mean, there's definitely, like, there's so many people on that 7x7 plot of land that, I mean, of course they're expecting disaster. I mean, people aren't going to know what to do. They don't help them. They don't help each other on the street. You know, when it's fine out, they're not going to help each other when there's an earthquake. You know, I mean, I hate to put it that way, but people don't think that way there, it seems, you know. Not like they used to.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. That's actually tragic in itself, but
that's the big bummer I think about that whole thing.
So of the activity that you've had in the theater, any apparitions?
You know, I really want to answer yes, and I do have this one experience when I think there was, but I'm just not sure, because like there's that theater had so many shadows and stuff in it that it's like I kind of almost wanted there to be something than there actually probably wasn't, you know. But I used to make my way in the dark there a lot, mostly out of laziness or not wanting to go back across the whole place to turn on the light. But it was then that I was like on this mezzanine level, and I hit this patch that was very cold, and I was like, oh my God, this is another time when and also at the time I was wearing these jangly keys because I wanted to leave a signature sound in hopes that someday I might haunt the place. I mean, I don't know.
That's awesome.
But I really thought that would happen, you know, and I still do. I mean, I hope I do. That would be an awesome place to haunt. But anyhow, so I'm, like, running around with my jangly keys, and so I'm thinking that I'm on the mezzanine level of the theater, which is the middle level, and I swear there were two side exits. And on this one side exit where I used to sneak up and watch shows, like when I was house managing, I swear I saw somebody, like, in the shadows. But then I get over there, and it's kind of cold, you know, but I just don't know if it was true. You know, I just don't know. And plus, I didn't know anything about the folks that died there and who it might be, you know, or anything like that. So,
well, I think it's interesting that a lot of times some of the things we do see, they come and go so quickly that I mean, and I've experienced lots of things, and I still, like, did that just happen? I mean, am I sure?
You know, uh-huh.
And you're not, unless uh-huh. you're filming or whatever, that sort of thing. I think that's completely natural for you to question yourself.
Right.
And probably healthy that you should question.
Yeah, right. And plus, I just felt like, well, it'll happen to, you know, like, I was thinking, like, I want it too badly this time around. And so I'll just walk away from it now and, like, they'll just kind of thinking, like, I know something's there, you know, but just sort of, like, that's kind of part of this sort of, like, respect thing I had in my mind about the theater, you know, that was just like, okay, it's your theater,
I'll back off. You know, and not try to confine you. So.
Mm-hmm. Did you have any, while you were there, should I say, do you know of any paranormal teams that might have come and investigated?
No, I don't think that ever. Except for the purifying of the spirits and the initial drum circle, I don't think that anything like that ever happened.
The group that did the purifying, was that, what was that?
That was set up by the artistic director and founder of Brava for Women of the Arts organization, Alan Gavin. And I wasn't there, and I'd only heard about it. But they went on the stage, and basically this group of Aztecs. Hold on a second. Aztecs in mind. Aztecs. So just check.
That's
make sure
cool.
They weren't mine. They also sensed a bad presence. There was evil spirits there. And so they were probably like, well, I know that they'd done circles in like groups of like 15 or 20. I don't know how many people were there though. But they smudged the place. That's the word I was thinking of. They smudged the place with sage. It's a thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same group of, you know, the movie La Mission. It's the same group of Aztec dancers you see in that movie.
Oh wow!
So, oh okay.
So check it out. Yeah.
I mean, so they have some fame to them too. I mean, do you think that anybody noticed the difference in a feeling maybe before and after the smudging?
Oh yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely. In fact, it was that in conjunction with the group just raced the place again, and I think that it sat stagnant for so long with like, just, you know, questionable things happening in it, and no one really using the theater or having anything to do with the actual history or purpose of the place. And I think that it just conjured up some bad mojo in there. And since it was embraced again for its intended purpose, I think that that really came through, actually.
Okay, yeah, because I was thinking smudging, when I hear the word smudge, it's different from cleanse. Smudge means, really, to me anyway, you're trying to get rid of something a little more unwelcome, a little more negative, doing some bad things.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, so...
Yeah, it was like that. So.
Interesting. Wow. So yeah. There must have been probably some other things going on that compelled people to decide.
I think so, too, and I'll never know what went on in there, you know, because the people that had it, you know, beforehand mm-hmm. were way before my time, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and then a lot of times you can't really trust stories that are handed down over so much time anyway, but you can. That's a tangible
thing. Yeah, I
guess so. The smudging is tangible, which means, you know, there was probably a cause at some point that somebody went, I'm scared, bad things are happening, let's get somebody to do something. Wow, well.
Yeah.
Wow. That's kind of cool. Mm-hmm. So is there any other things that you can think of maybe that happened there or to you, or is that...
Nothing that I can really think of, you know, nothing more significant than what I've already told you.
Yeah.
Maybe,
I mean, there doesn't have to be. I was just asking in case you wanted to include.
I know. I wish
else.
There was, you know. I wish I had way more stories than that. But in a way, I'm pretty satisfied with
yeah,
my experience
well,
there.
Well, you know, you say that, you know, you're wishing that some things happen to you, you know, and I know people who are actually, you know, paranormal investigators who haven't really had anything ever happen to them, and they go the
mm-hmm.
same thing. Oh, I'm going to go on another investigation, and I don't know if anything's going to happen. And then other people, they don't, you know, they don't look for it
mm-hmm.
at all, and suddenly, kaboom, something huge happens to them.
Right.
So.
And, you know, I think that has a lot to do with it. You know, I really feel like it's the kind of thing that... that will happen when you least expect it, and you have to just let it happen, you know?
Yeah.
and
right.
And that makes it kind of all the more special, I think, you know. So
I agree. Well, EW, do you have any more questions for Summer?
No, I just want to thank her for joining us tonight. It was an honor and a pleasure to have you here, and wonderful hearing your stories.
Oh, for me too. This has been such a treat for me. I have no idea. And let me take down, because I didn't do it earlier, when exactly, where can I find the show?
Well, how about this? How about I can either text
or
message
text
you.
It to me.
Yes, and I still haven't found you on Facebook, even though I know how to spell your last name. So, but we can do that. We'll connect through there, and I will text it to you, and no problem. But Summer, we want to thank you again for being here with us tonight. Very much appreciated.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome to come back anytime if you ever have any paranormal experiences, or you know, hey, you're new to Austin, if you just want to hang out or something like that, give me a call, give me a holler. I'm all about it.
You know what, that sounds great. I would love to. So.
Sounds good. Okay.
All right.
Well,
thank
you
very
much. All right, have a great night.
All right, you too.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, well, that was an awesome interview. Thank you so much, EW, for coming on the show and doing that with me. I hope that we can do a lot more of it together. And frankly, hint, hint, nudge, nudge, I'd like to see you on Para X altogether.
It would be awesome to join you some more here on Para X. Hopefully, maybe I'll do the hint, hint that Para X would like to pick up Paranormal for a show.
Yeah, I think that would be super cool. I really do, because you have a lot of listeners. You can bring them on over. So.
That's right, from all around the world. So, but remember, it's not just me. It's this wonderful teamwork, you and I.
That's right. I'll take that. Pat myself on the back. If you hear that smacking, it's me patting myself on the back. So, anyway, so thank you so much for being here, and I guess I'll be talking to you really soon.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Have a good night, EW.
You too.
Okay, well, that was awesome. The interview ran a little long. It looks like, obviously, no time for Paranormal Robot. I guess I called it right when I called it a mostly weekly series. Maybe Paranormal Robot should just have its own show, but sometimes I have time and sometimes I don't. I miss that Paranormal Robot when I don't get to put him on the air. He gets mad and his agent calls me, so... sorry, Paranormal Robot, I'll give you an extra 10% this week. So give you an extra can of oil if you please. Once again, just totally thanking EW Bradfute and Summer Shikazi for being on the show tonight. Just really fabulous. So I don't even have time for a second song. So what I do want to do is say, if you know anybody who has ever had a liver transplant, kidney transplant, any sort of organ transplant, in honor of them, you could please donate to the Mayo Clinic at mayoclinic.org and just click on Make a Gift. That would be a really nice thing, and I and the rest of my side of the family, and both sides of the family, are donating in honor of Mr. Ed Ramsey, my beloved father-in-law, and also... even though he's my brother-in-law who just passed away, my nephew's father, John Garacio, he did die of a heart attack, but he had terrible, terrible rheumatoid arthritis and other things. So that family would ask if you're interested or know anyone with arthritis to please donate to the Arthritis Foundation. And you can go either you can look him up on legacy.com and just search for John Garacio, GUERASSIO. And click on that, or you can go to arthritis.org and click on donate, and you can do it in his name or anyone's name or no one's name, but we would appreciate any donations that came to there. And now I'd like to say thank you very much. Have a great night. It's great to be back. Up next, it's Henry and Beth, as always, with the Paranormal View, only on parax.com. You guys have a fabulous night, and maybe I'll see you later at the wolfman.com for the Wolf Manor live investigation. All right, take care and have a good night. This is Sweet Roll signing off for Paraphernalia, only on parax.com.
The preceding program has been a production of the Para-X Radio Network.